Last night, Charles talked about the Four Noble Truths, and I was inspired hearing him to continue on the theme of dukkha, suffering, and what alleviates this quality of heart and mind that hurts is compassion. And we touched upon it just a little bit this afternoon when we did the metta practice towards a difficult person or a difficult part aspect of ourselves. There's a very fine barrier here between just allowing, sending kindness and wishing ourselves and other beings to be free from suffering. And it's really that open heart and that quality of metta, of kindness, you can say, that will just very naturally be the response when there is suffering, whether it's internal suffering or external. So this attitude of enabling the heart and mind to mature fully, to develop, really requires this wonderful tuning of understanding how we cause suffering for ourselves and understanding how we can cease it. And so I'd like to talk a little bit tonight about this process, because it may sound that, you know, we're in suffering and suddenly we're out of suffering. And there's a whole process that is happening. And I'd like to touch upon this. It's really when we nurture the heart when it's in pain that we are enabling this opening. But it's very, very, very gradual. And I think it's important to realize that, that we have the quality of patience, which is an ally for ourselves in relationship to suffering. Now that compassion flavor is to witness the pain without, of course, pushing it away or resisting it. That is really the quality of compassion. There's a possibility of just being open to what is, whether it's an emotional pain or a physical pain. There's this possibility of saying in our vipassana practice, even that quality is constantly called forth, that we are asked to be with just what is. And compassion here has as a source equanimity, which is the wisdom aspect of the four Brahmaviharas, meaning that equanimity is that possibility of non-reactivity. And that's what we are really cultivating and nourishing. And then from that space of equanimity, we're able to be much more at ease with what is emerging, opening and facing to the suffering. There is a sense of serenity, of whatever it is, it's okay. But that's not where we start. I'm sure that you can relate to that. It's really not where we begin. The Buddha's teaching exposed that it's possible to live a life without suffering, and that we can really inspire ourselves to hear this teaching. Yet we wonder, and even this morning I was in the group and people were expressing, you know, the more the days go by, the more suffering I'm exposing myself to. You know, I'm just wondering, just one more day and I'm going to go out of here and what? And so we talked, and that relationship enabled to see, oh yeah, it's not that things need to be a certain way. Often we don't realize, we don't relate in practice, and we don't have the distance to relate. That's why by chance you have people that you can relate to who can see for you that there is progress, meaning that we have so much judgment about what is happening within ourselves that we can't relate to what is true, what is really happening. And for that person, when I pointed to, hey, wait a minute, what you are describing is completely part of the process, and to relate to the judging mind. And it's okay to have the mind that is judging. That is what is happening. Judging mind will say, this is not okay. I'm not okay. I'm not a good meditator. I'm not a good person. And the other piece here is, I expect something different for myself. I want something different. And that's exactly where often in the relationship, in the attitude towards what is happening, that is what is the greatest cause of pain. Much more than what is really happening, that first pain. The Buddha called this the second arrow. And the second arrow is really about a person receiving a first arrow, okay? So there's pain, right? There's really physical pain. And the second arrow is the one that is the pain of reactivity, of really getting so caught into, rather than just taking the first arrow out, right? There's this whole manifestation of wondering about, how am I going to deal with this pain, instead of just really pulling out the first arrow. And it's this whole process that we're really in. Amazingly, it's quite extraordinary that there is the power of love that makes it that you're still here. If there wouldn't be the power of love and wisdom, probably, we wouldn't be able to stay present. Chogyam Trungpa says, when there is pain, love or loving kindness gives birth to natural compassion. The compassionate heart holds the pain and sorrow of our life and of all beings with tenderness. So it's really this tender heart that has the power to transform the world. It's amazingly simple in a way when we can relate to our own pain, and then very clearly this compassion manifests in action outwardly. But the Buddha really understood that one needs to face one's pain to be able to relate and to understand the pain in the world, the pain of another. And from that perspective, there's a possibility of real, real connection. So the Buddha was asked by a disciple if it would be true to say that part of our training, part of our meditation, is about love and compassion. And the Buddha's response, he said, no, it's not true to say that part of our training is about love and compassion. The whole training is love and compassion. The whole of it. Because that's what will manifest in action. Meaning that we understand and we really relate from that space of greater, greater, greater acceptance, opening. And not by avoiding. You can really notice now that I'm sure it's not. And even if we do avoid, we can avoid for just a moment. But then there's a transformation happening when we just allow that process to mature, to really be nurtured. I had a beautiful encounter one day with a teacher named Deepama, who was an Indian yogi. Great, great woman, who had the greatest pain in her life. She lost 2 children, her husband, and was in so much grief. Her heart was totally broken. And she was probably dying from her heartache. Until one day, a person said to her, you should start meditation. And so she did. She went to the Mahasi Center in Burma, And she couldn't even walk. She was crawling up the stairs, it said. And slowly, slowly, she regained her health and her well-being just by the practice. And really, I have a lot of friends who had known her then. And she evolved. She had incredible good karma, paramis, perfection of heart and mind, that her path was really just like a blooming flower in just a few years. And she began teaching. And as she was teaching, she was always emphasizing that what had healed her was that she just had a heart that was completely broken and that was really kind of dying. And she had a heart disease, which she healed only through the love of being in the present moment and accepting her life, her situation. And so a friend of mine who was one of her students asked her if she had, the student had just a few months to live, and she was really in having the question, should she practice loving kindness meditation or should she practice Vipassana? And she burst out laughing, this teacher, and she said, I don't see any difference. If one is fully present, there's bound to be love. And if one is fully loving, there's bound to be presence. And that's exactly the teaching. We're really joining, connecting those two beautiful qualities of heart and mind, where there's constantly remembering ourselves to be in the present moment just to see what is, seeing things as they are, not needing things to be different, and really appreciating and nourishing this quality of heart, of real love. So that's the aspiration. It's really our own motivation that will incline us to cultivate these two wings. And as we practice, we'll see that the process is evolving in the direction that it needs to go. And it's possible that for a lot of the time, we haven't been in that state. So what we meet as we begin, and a lot of us are beginning on the path, is suffering. And it's not that the practice brings suffering. It's something that we came with. And it's really helpful to remember that. I started out with 1 month of practice with Saira Upandita. And that was my very, very first retreat. And I remember that I was crying from morning to evening. There was absolutely no moment that there weren't tears. I was just so much in pain. Couldn't stand it, really. Every kind of pain, body pain, emotional pain. Couldn't stand the place, was in resistance, wanted to leave. And after 3 days, you know, I went and I really asked for advice. And the instruction that I received was, good cry. That's all he said. Really pretty much left on my own, right, to really deal with that kind of real pain. And so I said to myself, I'm going to leave, or I have an opportunity here to really see what I can do for myself. I don't know what risk he was taking, but I knew which one I was taking for myself. And because something, I can't even point out to what was the motivation, but something was calling to know that this was important. And if it wouldn't happen ever again, this would be the opportunity to really face the pain that I had built up and that I had not wanted to see for many, 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 many years. And it was incredible because the process started there of really, and I think it's for us all that we've had tears. And if we haven't had tears, that we've had some kind of pain where there is a difficulty to be just with what is, with the present moment. Now we want to see change in the world. It's amazing how, like Charles said last night, we really project outwardly what we want to see. And we don't look inside. And what we want to see change out there in the world is exactly where one needs to look inside and see what can happen from that place of connection. Gandhi says, you must be the change you want to see happen in the world. It's such a responsibility, though, don't you think? It's just like, whoa, you know? It really places things differently. I mean, the whole misperception of judging everything that's going wrong out there and take responsibility for just meeting ourselves and noticing what can happen within. And that's for the benefit of our own well-being and for the benefit of all beings. It really is where transformation can happen because it's the only place that we can do something really clearly valuable and that will make a shift. From that place of understanding, wholehearted presence and love and care, definitely compassion then is brought outwardly and it's directed in the world in whatever way we want to care for the world. People, there's so many causes today that we can care for. Save animals, save the planet, environment today, right? Peace movements, peace activities. All of that is absolutely beautiful. If there is the sense from which we have a motivation where we know which plant and which seeds we have nourished within ourselves. Now the understanding is that we all want to be happy and do not want to suffer. I think that's a universal common experience that one can say wherever we are in the world, whoever you ask. Now the idea of happiness may be different for some beings and not the same for others, but yet there is that inclination of not wanting to suffer. And therefore, we can live in that spirit of nourishing. What will bring happiness with it? I know that for myself, I've been very inspired by reading a lot of biographies. The one of Gandhi is extremely moving in the sense of suffering and his dedication to save other beings and stop eating. It's an incredible movement of heart and mind. It's just amazing. And there are other beings. And we know, I'm sure, people within our circles, and if it's not ourself, that we can be inspired by when there is that movement of really moving in the world in a way that we are manifesting love and compassion. The Dalai Lama says that, he says, when you are aware of your pain and suffering, it helps you to develop our capacity for empathy. It's this capacity which allows you to relate to other people's feelings and suffering. This enhances your capacity for compassion towards other people. And he's had such a life of suffering that, again, it seems that the people that really can talk and express this so beautifully are the people that have faced a lot of dukkha. Just a few months ago, he gave teaching to an audience, and there were, you know, a lot of people. He usually attracts many, many crowds. And his first thing he said, he was really laughing and very open, you know, how he can be. And he said, "People like me so much." And he says, "I wonder why." I reflected, why people like me so much. You know, there's pictures of me everywhere. And it's true, wherever I go, there's a picture of the Dalai Lama. And he says, "I think I know why. I think it's because I value the awakened heart and mind, bodhicitta." Right? That's just the awakened heart and mind. And he continued by saying, "You know, I really can't claim that I'm awake. I even can't claim that I practice it all the time. What I can claim, what I can say I do, is that I fully, totally, absolutely value it. Value the awakened heart and mind." And when hearing this from the Dalai Lama, I thought, how humble, you know? It's just so humble that with the whole activity that he does in this world, he has this stance of real ability to say, there's still so much work, and yet valuing the possibility of growth and wisdom. Even though he's an example for many, many beings. And so I think what happens, and in this example is just completely clear, that the Dalai Lama is not someone who's completely self-absorbed, right? And drowning in pain and really concerned about his own sake and his own life. And yet, it's completely part of the process to be able to open and to realize for ourselves that that's exactly what prevents us from moving in the direction of compassion. When we're drowning in our pain, when we're so self-absorbed, where there's so much sense of self-centeredness around me and my pain, there isn't the possibility of connection and of openness. And yet, it's not a problem. Because if we realize that, and that's exactly what we might have realized here, it's enough. Because what it brings us towards is to realize that, yes, this is the cause for suffering. This is the first meeting where we have a sense of opening to, oh, I'm hurting. Wow. Whatever it is that is happening, I'm hurting. And it's the possibility to really relate then in a different way, to move forward, to really incline the possibility of change. Now, that's probably not the first step. The first step is that we run away from ourselves so much of the time. You know, how busy we can get, and that's exactly what one person was expressing this morning. This person was saying, "My gosh, I never thought that the silence would be so healing. Every moment that I have a problem, I'm on my cell phone and I call a friend, someone to help me out that really is going to do it. And that's not a problem, yet we just prevent ourselves from really deepening the understanding of what is happening in relationship to pain. So that's why being alone in this process, and we're not really alone because really the support of each other is just so incredibly beautiful, even if it's in silence. We would never be able to do this week alone, really alone, without each other. Would you imagine? So there's a possibility there of real allowing and safety, that safety to be able to really move away from the surface of what is happening to something a little deeper. And then the process begins. Rather than really being in resistance where we just don't connect, we begin to connect and we may relate to bodily pain and have the process that we know very well of resistance, of not wanting to meet the body pain, if it's a knee pain or emotional pain, and to see all the strategies that we have to be able to alleviate the pain. And that's totally part of the process. It's really important to notice how this process happens, and it's the attitude of being mindful, recognizing the pain, whether it's in the emotions, whether it's in the body. Oh, there's pain, I'm hurting. How am I relating to this? Of course, the first thing is wanting it to go away. And usually what happens is that there's a lot that's done in reactivity, in resistance, in trying to find a way that we change the situation and judge ourselves because we don't feel good, because we weren't successful in changing the situation. And yet, this whole movement makes us understand that that's how we move from non-acceptance to acceptance. And there's a moment where, when we've tried everything, absolutely everything, and we notice that it hasn't worked, we surrender. There's a, not out of decision, but just because we're so tired, isn't it? That suddenly we're so tired and we're saying, okay, there's nothing I can really do here, right? Might as well not bother. And what happens there? We stop doing. We stop wanting to change. We really are enabling, finally, the process of allowing, of accepting, which really, that just makes us meet what is. And what is extraordinary is that that gives a glimpse of freedom. And so all our doing, we see how it causes the friction and the separation and the fragmentation. And when there is a sense that we stop even judging ourselves for not succeeding, that is when there's a true open heart of compassion. And it will be probably very small moments, even glimpses of that in a day. But it does change. There is a transformation that is happening. You notice that. Where is that body pain that you had yesterday or 3 days ago, or the emotion? Something else may emerge, but it's changed. There's constant change, and therefore we understand. What happens there is that we stop pretending. See, we stop pretending that there's something that if we do or we want to change, we'll be successful. And that moment of wisdom with compassion is a moment of truth. It's just a moment of cessation of suffering that Charles was talking of last night. It's just a moment of relief, the release of suffering. That's freedom. Now, very often the problem is that we don't give credit to this. We don't give a real, true value to that moment when there's a release of suffering. And therefore, move towards the next thing that we will want. And again, we're in pain. So really try to value those moments when there is a release. Just a simple release when there's peace. serenity, equanimity, non-reactivity, whatever you want to call it, which brings that sense of freedom. I received a poem from a yogi just a few months ago. I was teaching a month retreat, and at the end of the retreat, this yogi offered this poem to me, to both teachers. We were two. This poem is called, "And the Prisoner Said to the Jailer." There's a place down deep inside of me that will always be safe and totally free. I learned of this truth while alone in myself, which for many a day was the worst kind of hell. And then came the day, the first day of my life, a day of great insight that ended all strife. I saw for the first time, I felt my own pulse. I dropped all my longing to be somewhere else. I stopped looking outward and striving for pleasure, and found that within me was stored a great treasure, a vault filled with silence, a vast land of peace, a pool of deep stillness where bliss does not cease. I found that I carry my hope, my home, deep within. There's no place to go, nor a place to begin. I see millions of people who are on the outside, who live just like dogs that are all strongly tied. They think they have freedom since they walk a few paces, can go to the pub or a day at the races. Well, I'll tell you a secret. They all live in fear. They have eyes that don't see and ears that don't hear. They just go on running in search of contentment and wind up frustrated and full of resentment. They still haven't learned that they have all they need. That buried within is a beautiful seed. The seed is the treasure of which I have spoken. Germination occurs once illusions are broken. So you can go on needlessly locking myself, for I've learned to find heaven where you only see hell. And I'm no longer thinking of the lock and the key, since I found that within me, I'm totally free. So it's not that we need to open the door of the self. Is it? Freedom comes from being able to be completely free within. This was a meditator, really going through hell, probably like many of us. And the same conditions just brought this beautiful poem, a sense of a moment of insight, of clarity, of understanding, of real openness and valuing that peace, that freedom. And that's exactly what I'd like you and myself to really hear in this poem, is that there's a value. When he speaks of that treasure, it's really to allow ourselves to reflect on the treasures that we have encountered. Not only the hell realm. Mm-hmm. Hermann Hesse says, you know quite well deep within you that there is only a single magic, a single power, a single salvation, and that is called loving. Well then, love your suffering. Do not resist it and do not flee from it. Give yourself to it. It is only the aversion that hurts. And that's exactly it. It's that whole movement of resistance, of aversion, that keeps us from feeling entire, from feeling whole. And once we realize that it's the aversion that hurts, the not wanting, the pushing away, really all these ways that we have to not just love the suffering, then that's when there's freedom. That we can allow and love also the moments when there is aversion. That you need to really meet the hate, the anger, all these states that are completely opposites to love and compassion. That's where the connection is. And it's often that we find ourselves really rubbing against that barrier, that edge, and it hurts. But the hurt comes from not accepting the aversion. And so we open very gradually to allow what is present, to connect moment after moment with what is present. And when there's resistance and not wanting, we really allow that to be. I had an experience where I really did a very long retreat, and for a lot of the time there was so much suffering, and faced it as best I could, pushing away, resisting. It was a little bit opening, and then pulling back and shutting down, and that's exactly what we do. That's the process. One moment will open, and then the next will close, and the moment will open. And it's really the movement of the waves that manifest. And that's how gradually there's transformation that happens. So it's really quite important to respect our resistance, and that there are moments that it's just not possible to be compassionate. And therefore, that's exactly where the seed of patience and acceptance needs to mature, just to stay still. There's that sense of real patience that's needed. And it is really quite extraordinary, after the wave, after the rush of the wave has passed, to notice, oh, what was that about? Until the next one comes up. Isn't it true? This is a poem from Rumi. It's called Bird Wings. Your grief for what you've lost lifts a mirror up to where you're bravely working. Expecting the worst, you look, and instead, here's the joyful face you've been wanting to see. Your hand opens and closes, and opens and closes. If it were always a fist, or always stretched open, you would be paralyzed. Your deepest presence is in every small contracting and expanding, the two as beautifully balanced and coordinated as bird wings. And that's exactly how the practice evolves. Contracting, opening, contracting, opening, expanding and closing. It's impossible for the hands to always stretch open. And that is something we don't want to hear. But when we really accept that, the practice gets so much more simple. it's really a process of greater, greater, greater acceptance, which has no end. And that greater acceptance just brings in a greater compassion. I had the extraordinary luck of testing once I had sat on my cushion for all these months. I still had time, and rather than stay on retreat, I had chosen to manifest and to really kind of, yeah, I can say test my sense of compassion and transformation in the setup of service to help. And so I really wanted to face the suffering in reality, you can say, because it's true that we might say, okay, all these hours on the cushion, and then what happens in real life? And so I offered my time, and love, you can say, in the set up of a hospital. Thought, I'm sure to meet suffering there in a hospital, there's no way that I won't be able to really see what happens and how I'm really faced with what is present. And surprisingly enough, the hospital said, yes, it's a very nice way to help and serve. And I was really absolutely not skilled at all in that field. And so I just volunteered. And it was just amazing because the moment I opened the door, I had absolutely not realized the amount of suffering. You know, it's, I mean, I've attended to a parent or a very sick friend. But in a hospital, it's just like so much of it that I was also just out of retreat, a very long retreat, so I was really completely open and vulnerable. And yet, it was so fascinating to watch the process of expansion and contraction, to really see that what most helped me was to really stay completely present within my own capacity of heart to be able to help in the best way possible other beings. And of course at times there was such pain in the face of pain that the heart closed down and was completely swallowing up all the suffering and therefore overwhelmed. At other times I was completely closed down because there wasn't the possibility of taking in maybe a family member who had just lost a parent. And so it was amazing to watch in the face of suffering how that compassion was just emerging in the face of opening to what is. And then there were moments that it was just not possible. There was the reverse, the opposite state. And that was okay too. There could still be a sense of presence, and yet not that sense of expecting myself to be always perfect in that situation. And I'm sharing this story because so much of the time we don't act in compassion, or we have a sense of really not knowing how to act because we think we expect from ourselves a way to be, which is not the reality of what is expected from us. It's just that possibility of being humble, just like the Dalai Lama, of this is all that I can offer, and it's enough. And so often, it will be just a smile or holding a hand, and with a friend, if that is the case, if you have someone that isn't suffering, it's often just being present that it will be helpful. And that is the beautiful quality of heart of compassion. Often we think that it must be much more, and it's not the case. I'd like to share a story about a person that really exemplifies the possibility of the power of mind, and how in small acts, even for us all, this is a possible action in regard to compassion, and that any moment we can really nurture this quality. This is a true story, and it really shows that if one cares and one connects to what is happening around us, we can sense that we are helping. It's called the power of the mind. Lady was stuck in a traffic jam caused by an accident. Feeling sure that people must have been hurt, she just sent kind and loving thoughts to whoever was involved, meaning that you can say that she did metta, right? Some weeks later, she received a letter of thanks from one of the accident victims who told this remarkable story. She had been knocked unconscious and found herself looking down on the scene, feeling frightened and disoriented. A comforting wave of love and caring swept over her, making her feel much better. She quickly traced the feeling to our woman sitting patiently in her car. The unconscious victim was so powerfully impressed by this experience that she resolved to thank her benefactor and noted her car registration number. When she regained consciousness, she remembered the number, traced the owner of the car, and wrote to her, thanking her. What an amazing story. Kind, compassionate words. No, I think it's great. It's just like this universal love and power where there's absolutely no limit. And so there's this incredible possibility of when we're sitting in our car to be able to really care for the world. And wherever it is, that's possible. And you see that it can be received by another being. Really beautiful. So Pema Chodron says that when we begin to let ourselves be touched by our own heart, and that's exactly what we've been doing here, and we begin to discover that for ourselves, it's really possible to notice how bottomless, how vast the loving energy and the compassionate heart can really, really affect all of our life. We begin with ourselves, and then compassion is done in action towards other beings. And we can notice, and she says, this heart, this mind of ours, is completely vast, limitless. There's absolutely no end, no barrier to the connection that we can have. She says it's as vast as space. What I think is really so beautiful is that it's really simple. As the Dalai Lama says, my religion is kindness. No need for big temples, no need for complicated philosophy. Our own brain, our own heart is our temple. If we met the world, he says, with that very simple kindness, the world would be in a much better place. And it starts, he says, with our own kindness. Just be kind to one another, he says. It's simple. We live and we help. in whatever way we can. And I think that's exactly what we're invited to do here for ourselves. And from that space of real connection, of enabling whatever it is that has been felt for you, from that space then to offer this kindness outwardly in your life. This is just the last phrase from the Dalai Lama. He says, the more we truly desire to benefit others, the greater the strength and confidence we develop, and the greater the peace and happiness we experience. Let's sit for just a minute.